Slay.
I licked the microphone by accident. It was gross.
That sounds cool.
ASMR. Yeah. You got to get those little guards for it, though. And make the right kind of mouth sounds.
You know what's fallen out of favor?
What?
Rounds.
A cappella?
Oh, we could do a round.
Like doing things in the round?
Doing things in the round.
Like theater in the round?
Yeah.
Like
well, I'm thinking more like row, row, row your boat.
Let's do it. You start.
Row, row, row your boat.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Okay, this is scary.
It's trippy, man. Back in the day, they didn't have like magic eyes or like...
except
like Zurika by Flaming Lips on magic. Four CDs. You had to sing in the round to sure. like blow your mind.
You know, yeah. I would like to see a little bit less magic eyes and more magic guys.
A little less magic lies.
And some more magic thighs. Mm.
Magic eyes, magic eyes, magic eyes.
Magic guys, magic thighs, magic smize.
It's gorgeous.
That's when I smile with my tongue behind my teeth, like Tyra.
Like Tyra. R.I.P.
Are you from the future?
Yeah, sorry. I'm Cable.
Imagine being
Damn, call me DirecTV because we hang out. So that's the episode, I guess.
It's sunny. It's beautiful. We're drinking everyone's favorite 80-degree day beverage, Cabernet Sauvignon.
Nothing says spring like a little bit of almost 40-year-old Cabernet.
Spring hath sprung in this house.
Yeah. You said in a text, hey, I can bring you this wine. And Kevin acted like you were doing us a favor, which fuck you both. Like, this is...
This is incredible.
It looks so unappetizing.
This is the premise of the season.
Yeah, I hate this season.
We haven't made John mad enough yet.
It smells really good, guys.
Well,
first of all, how is everyone today?
Great. Just very good. Just very, very good.
What'd you do over the weekend?
I mostly pooped a lot. I had diarrhea for my children.
Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of pooping.
That sounds awesome, man.
Yeah, this is John Hayes talking about poop. I'm just sorry.
This is a really good me episode so far. This is the one we send to the James Beard Awards.
It was a long weekend, but we're here. We're fine. I get a new couch tomorrow.
Is that related?
No. No.
I'm going to have a hard time picking myself. I feel like a lizard on a rock right now.
Because of the heat or because of your
life? I mean, it's no matter how long I've been alive, and it's a little longer every day.
Yeah.
Every time a day like this rolls around.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, they did it again. Spring happened.
Yeah, right.
Somehow.
They made it.
Yeah.
Somehow spring has returned.
Uh-huh. Watching Public Enemies.
Okay, cool.
The Michael Mann movie with disgraced actor Johnny Depp.
Sure.
Sorry, vindicated actor Johnny Depp.
There you go. Yeah.
Also, famously a pooper.
There's a poop part of that. I mean, yeah. I don't think he... Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure he poops. The other one supposedly pooped.
But okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to have this conversation, actually. This is so vile.
But there's this thing in it where, like, he walks into this room, it's summer, and they're in fucking Illinois or something. And he, like, walks to the sink, and he's just, like, he runs the water, and he just puts his, like, wrists under, like, the faucet. And he's, like, talking, and he's, like, it's too hot in here. Let's go somewhere else. He has, like, a weird, fake Johnny Depp southern accent. But it always makes me think, when you watch movies like that, like, people used to just be hot all the fucking time in their house. To the point where they would just like run water over their wrists to cool them down.
It's still a good thing to do for like an anxiety attack.
Sure. There you go.
What's anxiety?
No one knows. It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I've never had that.
I'm a little worried about talking about it.
I used to, stop me if you've heard this. Mm-hmm. I used to live in North Africa.
Wow.
And what I did when it was really hot, I would drink hot tea.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Oh.
It did not help.
Yeah.
And sometimes bees would fall into my tea because it was full of sugar, uh-huh. and they would drown. And I would just be sitting there with a hot tea full of fucking bugs. And like, I'm going to kill myself. And I didn't.
You didn't.
And now I have air conditioning.
You should have run your wrists underneath cool water.
There was no cool water.
John, I've often thought that you're a hot cup of tea full of bees.
Yeah, actually, that sounds kind of cool.
It sounds like an Action Bronson rhyme or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like a rhyme by a person who's not very good at rapping, is what I mean. But really good at making wine.
I think to me it has the same energy as like, you know, three raccoons in a trench coat.
Uh-huh, sure. They must be really hot because they don't have air conditioning.
They do have little hands.
Mm-hmm. Not only do they not have air conditioning, but they're wearing their own fur coats.
Yeah, and they always look like they're washing their hands, sort of.
It's true. Or maniacally plotting something.
Now, what in the fuck are you doing, dog? Thank you.
But the records show that John was talking to his actual dog and was not referring to one of us as a dog. No.
That would be so dismissive. Yeah. What the fuck are you doing, dog?
Podcasting.
So today I have a lot of cool information for you guys.
Okay.
I've made a lot of changes in my life. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
First of all, guess who's a weed vape guy? It's me. Mm-hmm. So I bought a weed vape. I made a weed tincture over the weekend. And this shirt I'm wearing, is it a shirt or a jacket? Nobody knows.
I'm so proud of you.
I'm like so you're, final form.
You're basically a chef?
I hate wine. I fucking hate wine. Now. I don't want to drink anything ever again. This is like such a nightmare to me.
For the record, just so the listener knows, in the glass is Napa Cabernet. Uh-huh. This is, you sound like a Final Fantasy character right now, John. Shirtless, wearing only a jacket with a tincture that you made yourself in potions.
My health potion.
Yeah.
Well, hello, guys. Welcome to Disgorgeous. It's a podcast about wine, but it shouldn't be. It should be about the environment, which is the only thing I care about because it's 420.
Stick the landing.
It's almost Earth Day. I don't know. Yeah. I'm John McCarroll.
Hi. I almost said happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I'm John McCarroll.
I'm Kevin Diamond. Our guest today is James Slay. And this is, we're off to a great start so far.
Let's just take that.
Should I take that again?
Our gay today is James Slay.
Oh, boy.
Welcome to This Gorgeous. My name is Kevin Diamond. It's a podcast about wine. Our guest today is James Slay, and John McCarroll is also here. He is wearing a shirt. It doesn't look like a jacket.
Okay, well, then I guess we solved that question.
Yeah, the riddle's been solved.
Welcome to This Gorgeous. It's a...
There we go.
It's a wine about a podcast. Uh-huh. I'm John McCarroll. Joining me is
about a horse.
James Sly and Kevin Diamond. Mm-hmm.
That was actually a good way of us to trick you to say your name. And looks like you said Sly, not Slay, which is what you told me like 8 years ago. And I still believe that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like this wine, for the record. I really like it. It tastes like... a bunch of like menthol cigarettes fell into a pile of leaves.
I was going to say it tastes like if you made tea, but instead of water, you use prune juice.
Yeah.
It does have a lot more youth to it than I was expecting. I do canonically wish I wasn't drinking it, but it's good.
So, okay, let's get into it, right?
I guess we go straight in, right?
Welcome to Cab Sauv, Sauv Blanc.
Could you guys catch me up? Where are we in terms of like, I actually did listen to the episodes.
Yeah.
Because I was sort of curious to sign.
So like this season's a little different. We're going to do things a little differently here. It's like more like small plates designed to share.
Normally we have 7 bottles of wine and we talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
Now we're right wings.
And now there aren't maps.
No maps.
No fucking maps. This is like the least James episode possible. There's no fucking history.
And there's only 2 bottles of wine.
There's only 2 bottles of wine. There's only 2 grapes. And we're going to talk about grapes, not about people. We're not going to talk about places. We are going to talk about those things. I'm just kidding, James. James was looking so nervous.
I have yet to Google Cabernet Sauvignon or Sauvignon Blanc.
Why would you do... Like, what would come up?
What if I learned a cool fact?
Wine. Yeah. These are wines.
Maybe the ancient Egyptians planted them. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Like who? Like France, probably. Goodbye. Yeah, that's it. That's all you got to know.
Sauvignon mean the word for wild is fun. I like that. Mm-hmm. We talked about that last episode.
Yeah, we knew that one.
I mean, like the point of this season for me is like we know what we need to know about these grapes, but what do we not know that we need to know? There are known knowns, there are known unknowns, and there are unknown unknowns. I'm sort of looking for the third way.
Drinking Cabernet and quoting a Bush administration figure, it really is 2003 all over
again.
This
is what's happening. This is going on.
Time is a flat circle.
I'm trying to... the only way through... No, only way out is through.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let's go.
Okay.
Yeah. So...
So we watched... I watched. We watched. Emily was there, too. Big Sturge, the producer of this episode. We watched My Best Friend's Wedding the other night.
Sure.
That's a Julia Roberts one?
It's a Julia Roberts movie.
It is.
Yeah.
And they drink wine in it a couple times. And I just kept on, like... There was a scene of a dinner party with Rupert Everett, who's Julia Roberts' boss. And he's hosting his dinner party with all of his, like, bohemian New York friends. And I was so mad that I didn't get to see what bottle was on his table. Because, like, I was like, I know they're going to get it wrong, but I know it's going to be some kind of... Like, there was just no information.
Right.
And I bet you he was drinking a Cote de Rhone. And I got to imagine that this is the kind of wine that cool New York people drank in the early, mid-90s.
Yeah.
Like, there was no other types of wine available for people.
Yeah, although, I figure cool New York people were probably exclusively drinking French wine in 1994.
Really?
I think...
I actually wonder about
I mean,
that.
I haven't worked in New York...
Know.
I mean, I don't know, right? Like high-end steakhouses, there would have been like the, you know, the Cabernets that you could only, that weren't offered to retailers, so you could only buy them in restaurants sort of deal. But I think if it's like 1994, there's only three sommeliers in New York and they're all French and they all work exclusively in uptown French restaurants.
Who are they?
Their names are, you could Google this. I don't know. They, I mean, they don't exist anymore.
I also tried to read Aldo Sam's wine book today.
Wow.
I was in an Austrian museum. I opened it. I started taking psychic damage immediately. He was like, he has one chapter about why he doesn't like natural wine. And it was like, friend of the pod, Aldo, come on the podcast. Don't do your weird little grimace thing that you do with your fucking face.
It's an audio form.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, you would see it. You would see it.
I would see it. I don't want to see him do his fucking Christoph Waltz face.
You could record back to back.
Hamilton style,
but I think New York is a market. Like even the New York that we work in and sell wine in has always kind of like looked east. You know, I don't know if
I mean, I assume like
I feel like it would have been like ooh, like the height of sophistication to drink Chablis.
But see, like okay, let's talk in 90s.
Because it's late 90s. It's like 97 or 98. I think is
in the
my 80s, best friend's wedding.
You were still calling white wine from California Chablis, right? So by the 90s, we've put a stop to that, we're thinking. And you're actually, if you're drinking Chablis, it's really Chablis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
So there's that stupid, this is going to be such, we're going to talk about Instagram and Twitter a lot today. Sorry, guys. You know that stupid joke? Like, it's only so-and-so if it comes from France. Right. Otherwise, it's just sparkling ennui or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, the fact that joke still exists. Means that we're really not that far from calling California wine Chablis. Like,
no,
most people still think you should call California wine Chablis. Like, people routinely, like, have you ever been into a wine store, which I don't advise you to do, they still say, oh, you want champagne. Do you want champagne, or do you want sparkling?
Like, yeah.
Oh, you have to.
Our skill set is the most useless thing the world has ever seen.
And I think like maybe we're getting hung up on the idea of like cool people in New York, what they were like. Maybe
Rupert
cool
Everett
in
is
New York,
so cool.
What does he do?
He is Julia Roberts' gay editor, and he goes to the wedding with her ex to pretend to be her current boyfriend and spends the entire time scandalizing people and trying doing like
what industry does he work in?
Publishing.
He's probably drinking American wine. I think.
You he's
think?
English.
I think so.
In publishing, he's drinking French wine.
He's English?
He's English.
Okay, he's definitely drinking French wine.
No, but he lives in New York, and he has this like, kind of ribald streak. I think he's drinking American wine because he probably thinks it's kitschy.
Yeah, maybe. I think, like, if I'm imagining... Oof, when did Sex and the City start? 97, right? Around
for me?
Then? Because I imagine that if they weren't drinking
about rose, 15 minutes after you guys leave,
no, it wasn't time for rosé yet. Oh,
they weren't drinking wine. Only actually, Sam. Only
that's true. They were drinking Cosmos.
Yeah,
exclusively.
Yeah. Samantha drinks wine.
Actually, when I try to imagine And I you know, I think about history and like acculturation of taste and aesthetics a lot. I know. When I try to imagine like what American people were drinking wine-wise in the 90s, I actually my mind goes blank for a second. I could paint you a pretty convincing picture of like the 70s and 80s. I could tell you about the early aughts.
It feels like a dark hole.
Yeah.
A black hole, like, I guess what you happened? Call it.
Uh-huh. Okay, so tell us about the 70s and 80s. That's actually interesting.
Well, because we are drinking an 87.
Yeah, we should introduce the wine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can already feel, because of where my own brain chemistry is at right now, that this is going to be a kind of episode where we dwell on the flat circle of time and on the way that we are, like, our lives are folding recursively back on ourselves, and how, like, Instagram showed me a picture of myself 10 years ago sitting outside of Terroir East Village, a bar that no longer exists, post service from a restaurant that no longer exists.
Yeah.
You know, with a face and body that no longer exist.
I'm like, death.
Yeah.
Let's just call this episode Twink Death.
There we go. The little death. So I wanted to. I thought it would be fun to bring Cabernet, to bring something with age on it.
Yeah,
because like that's sort of also like, to the extent that I had any like edifying moments with Cabernet Sauvignon as a wine when I was, you know, working in restaurants, it was always stuff with age on it. And it used to be that you could, for very, very little money, you could buy old Napa Cabernet because nobody gave a shit about the old stuff. They only wanted stuff that was younger and newer. And that's when, like,
I mean, that sounds so California.
And so I had this bottle, it was actually given to me as a, like for my birthday years ago. This is a birth year. It's 1987.
Thank you.
Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. It is Cabernet Sauvignon. I know I'm dating myself. And it's from producer called Gerard. Should I get into the producer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to look this up. Like, who the fuck is it?
Yeah.
But I think this is a really, like, kind of classic and telling story, because the thing, like, when you're thinking about a wine like this, obviously you're thinking about, oh, and this is old, right? This is aged in bottle. This is 37 years old. But it's also, you know, the conditions, like how it was grown and made are radically different. Like, Gerard still exists as a brand name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gerard was a guy. I think his first name was Lee or something. He was a father-son duo. They bought some land outside of Oakville in the 60s.
I mean, that's hammer country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they planted.
Hammer, don't hurt him.
They either had their first vintage, they planted, or they had their first vintage in 1975. I think it was either 1975 they planted, and then their first vintage was, you know, in 3 to 5 years, whatever. They made wine for 20 years, estate-grown Cabernet from what is now the Rudd Winery. Then it went defunct for a couple years, right. Then they sold to a different rich dude. Different rich dude bought the name. But the, you know, the winery was gone. I don't know what happened to the vines. And then that brand name got spun up into effectively a completely different winery that's now like in Calistoga. I don't know if they buy fruit or have estate. Obviously, the winemaking is totally different.
Yeah.
There's also a thing that happens. I don't know if I'm getting too deep into the weeds here, but like, you know, there was a lot of California's vines were planted on supposedly phylloxera resistant AXR1 rootstock that turned out to not be phylloxera resistant. And so a bunch of them died in like 1991, 1992 and were replanted. And you had sort of, so you had like two things that happened in the early 90s. One is that Napa Cabernet was becoming a big enough thing that money was starting to notice. And so like 91 is the year the Mondavi sells to Constellation and these like previously like wineries that were owned by people start to become owned by like large like pools of money
now,
and quick, corporations.
In your professional opinion, is that good or bad? I'm just checking because it sounds efficient.
Super sweet. Yeah. Efficiency is really important, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The second thing is different rootstocks get planted. Mm-hmm. And there's this interview that I read 10 years ago with Steve Mathiasen.
Oh, Interview with the Vampire.
Exactly. Sorry, this is going to be the lore dump, and then we can.
No, this is good. I'm just going to make that joke.
I know. Where he was. So there's this. I don't know if you got. This was something that sort of I learned or had to learn as a Somali. Like 1997 is this like inflection point where Napa Cabernet becomes a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this, it's a vintage where like every, like there was a heat spike. And so all the ripeness concentrated, like everything got ripe in the same week. And a lot of it got, they couldn't bring, there wasn't enough space. And so they couldn't bring all of it in. And so fruit just hung on the vine and basically raisinated, got mm-hmm. pruny. And then they pressed it off and they made these monsters, and the monsters got lauded by critics.
Yeah. Good people that we like.
Uh-huh.
We yeah. love wine critics. Yeah.
RP, et cetera. And then that became the template going forward. But what Mathiasen suggested in this interview, because that's sort of the Gesso story, is like, mm-hmm. oh, like this vintage, or even maybe even the Gesso story is more like, oh, like people change their like their winemaking style to get points, and then mm-hmm. the wines got big.
Right.
But what Mathiasen basically suggested in the interview is that it was actually farming that had changed first. Mm-hmm. Post-phylloxera planting with different rootstocks, and then changing the way that like stuff like canopy management and things were happening. They got too good at like excising all of the green like leafy stuff and trying to get like what they thought was perfect ripeness. Mm-hmm. And so the result of that was in the end you had these wines that were these crazy high octane 15%, like, and then you had to figure out how to sell them. Mm-hmm. And so it was you had to change people's tastes in order to acculturate them to like, this is the way that fancy wine is supposed to be.
It sounds like there's probably part of both.
Right. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, yeah. I think about like when you're talking
but,
about
but aesthetics
that.
Don't change just because people suddenly decide that they like how something looks better. No, it's, I think material conditions like feed into the, and then there's that
you need
dance.
To have both.
Yeah. There's a push play. Yeah.
I mean, it's not just like Nestle is not the only reason why we drink bottled water, but like they certainly created an idea that like we needed something called bottled water and then provided the thing. And so like, you know, for thousands of years, people didn't drink water out of plastic bottles. And then all of a sudden, it's like the only way people drink water. And so my point here is like,
okay,
you have to create.
And this is mostly water.
You create. Well,
and
sure,
it's in a bottle, Kevin.
You create whatever. You have the thing. You need people to buy it. You create the need mm-hmm. for it by whatever means. And then people decide they actually do like it and need it and can imagine not having it anymore. And that's what I feel like happened. And the weird thing about it is how much more recently it happened than I always feel like it happened. Mm-hmm. Like if you're talking about between 91 and 97,
yeah.
between the phylloxera, like the replanting of everything in 91, and then like 97 being that vintage, somewhere yeah. in that
which
run,
is also 6 years where money is really acquiring previously established.
And like I moved to New York in 2005 mm-hmm. and started working in wine in 2008. We're only talking about 10 years.
Yeah.
And then now it's 20 years later. Like,
and by then we were already living in the sort of like received reality of like, well, this is a Napa cab.
Yeah, well, right. And it was like, and that's such a faster thing than I thought it was at the time.
So here's what I'm thinking. This is my timeline, okay? And I want to match it up to a timeline that, a Gesso story, I believe. Mm-hmm. 97 is the big vintage in Napa. Whether or not that was the vintage, that vintage, it's a Gesso story or not, whatever, I don't care. Sideways, the movie, was 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
So that movie is instantly like, it's putting a stamp on it. It's making something seem like a given, like that's how the world is. But those guys would be like, and they're young guns. They are like a young Paul Giamatti playing a young wine critic yeah. who's trying to make his fucking bones out there.
And who's doing like the cool thing mm-hmm. of being like, no, I'm into Pinot Noir.
And then the other Gesso, the joke is Merlot is his favorite grape, but he can't have it because it reminds him of his fucking ex-wife, yes, and right. no one gets that.
No one gets that.
But you and I started this podcast in 2016, drinking mostly wines from the 2015 vintage, which is the vintage I have always said destroyed Beaujolais, mm-hmm. even though 2009 was probably worse. But it was like the big vintage made Beaujolais crazy. So we are right at the time when it would be like, uh-huh. someone would be greenlighting the movie about natural wine guys getting pissed off about Beaujolais vintages right now.
With a young wine critic?
Ooh. I just wanted to know, I'm ready. I'm camera ready.
John, they're not going to let you play yourself.
Oh.
Ooh, who are we face casting for John in Sideways 2?
Who's that really tall,
further
weird guy?
Sideways.
With stash or without? Because right now, John still has stash.
This is the longest I've had stash for a
Timothy,
while.
It's Timothy Chalamet, isn't it?
No, God.
God, I would.
No way.
Someone who has to be very it's, baby
who's
girl.
Who's the tall guy from Veep?
Fuck you.
Buster from Arrested Development?
No, the off-putting guy.
The John, guy everyone hates. not that everyone hates John.
No, everyone hates me. Yes. It's okay. I should just die.
No, you shouldn't die. That'd be sad. I mean, like, maybe a young David Hyde Pierce would work.
Well, how are we going to do that?
We'll just use a time machine.
De-aged Mark Hamill.
And I want to be young Tony Soprano. What's his son's name? Not AJ, but the actual actor's son who played Marcus? Young Tony Soprano in the Newark movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Anthony.
Not from the show.
He's got a name.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a good movie.
I'm just saying, like, it is interesting putting Napa Cabernet into context because it instantly makes me think about, like, the Shannon thing, like all of the wine scenes we've seen, they appear permanent if they happen like the year before you start thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it turns out they actually all have a fucking root cause and a cosmology, and they can be ended.
We're at that age where this is so apparent.
Todd, remember, I was about to say when you're young, this is old man podcast. But yeah, like when you're young, you look around and the way that the world is, you're like this is how Shannon has always been cool. Like Napa's always been huge.
Yeah,
whatever. And then the longer and aging is not like a virtue.
No God. If you're listening to this, do not get older.
Our cells are just falling apart. But one of the things that happens is like suddenly like you realize how. Because you have the opportunity to see more new things kind of come about.
You see that hair metal is closer to the Beatles than it is to what's popular now, Phoebe Bridgers. Like that is like
Renee true. Rapp.
Right, mm-hmm. Renee Rapp. Thank you very much.
Chappelle Roan.
Oh, that's good. She's good. I mm-hmm. like her. Yeah. John, do you listen to Chappelle Roan?
I don't.
Okay, you're fucking up.
It's a feminine phenomenon.
Okay, I'm going to listen to Chappelle Roan.
You're going to fucking love it.
I couldn't even tell you how that's pronounced or spelled.
Spelled like Dave Chappelle, but without the E.
It's spelled like Domain de Chappelle. No, it's not. It's spelled like
C H A P E L.
Chappelle in French.
Oh. And then Roan.
Like a horse.
R-O-A-N.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that. Yeah. I will report back next week.
Thank you.
I forgot to do some even more regular exposition. I think it's just worth noting, like, this wine. So it's Cabernet. It's from Napa.
It's from 1987.
It's from 1987. It's probably, I can't even find an alcohol here, but it's probably like 13.5, right? It is not.
There's not much.
If we opened like a current vintage mm-hmm. of Girard, it would be oak fucked and like probably 15%, and it would taste different than this. Like if you,
this is pleasant, like, by the way.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to drink, and it's like not like, you know.
What's so surprising to me, and I yeah, it also has been in here for 37 years.
Yeah,
I want to know the farming.
It's been stored. Oh, bad. I was wondering about this, but like they, you know, these guys, they bought the land, they planted, they probably hired a consultant. The consultant was Davis trained. Like,
nice.
It farmed out of a book. There was nobody doing like good, like there, you know, there's no like, I think you had to be inspired to, you know, there are people with a lot of money who hire people now where it's like maybe they hire the biodynamic consultant and they're like, yeah, we like the environment. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll give you a shit ton of money to build like a really expensive winery that's green, whatever. Mm-hmm. Not in the fucking 70s. No. They like the manual was going to be like, and also, you know, it makes the vineyard prettier, right? Like,
in fact, yes.
One of the big, you guys know this, but like, you know, one of the big like generational differences when like the kids are getting the vines off Roundup and off herbicides and off everything else is their dad's coming and they're like, it looks messy in here. Mm-hmm. Like, clean up your room. Where the room is like life instead of dirty clothes.
Well, they say, you know, dirt is matter out of place. Now, what's so interesting, I think I agree with you on the farming. It's just that like, I still think the bad farming period was post-war, like 1948 until 1998.
Yeah.
Which feels like a really long lost period. No one right to tell me I'm wrong, but it does seem to be that was like, just
it was,
everyone
it was
conventional.
Worse in France.
Yeah, everything is.
Mm. But I think in California it was like irrigation and Roundup for neatness. And, you know, you didn't have to spray as many pesticides probably. Mm. Because it's dry.
In 87, this is not new California, right? This is California.
This is definitely like new California hasn't, it's like it's not.
We're a long way away from New California. To me, would be kind of late aughts at the earliest. It's like Arno Roberts, Trousseau.
California tracks.
New California, like the Lone Ranger stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
like
I see.
Late '80s, but early '90s. I feel like
actually
came into. Mm-hmm. And to be fair,
Steve Edmonds was like working now, but not in Napa. You know, you also would have to go somewhere else in the state. Yeah. I think, right?
I think so too. Yeah, it wasn't really happening. I don't really feel like
Bonnie Doon is in the Central Coast. You know?
Right. When were the first? I'd be curious to find out when the first organic farming was being practiced in Napa proper.
Was it the fucking cult? No, they.
They're not in Napa. Yeah. No, they're not in Sonoma. They're in the Sierra Foothills. Oh, they're in North Yuba. Yeah. Okay. They're out in the middle of nowhere. The CCOF, I had to look this up, was one of the early organic certifications, the California. Uh-huh. And that was in like 73 or something like that. Early. Yeah. So you could get certified. And Napa, organic farming. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
If anywhere was going to be, again, the weird thing is because there's, when you talk about California Cabernet,
Frog's Leap was organic a lot earlier before anybody else, starting in like 83. I made that up. It could be the late 70s, in fact.
But like, because there's these two things that are really like struggling, which is like, when you gloss it over, do you gloss it over as a bunch of dumb cowboys, or do you gloss it over as these are California people? Right. And like, if you do the bunch of dumb cowboys, it's like, oh, they're never going to do organic. But if you just remember, they're all Californians, you're gonna be like, oh, they probably went organic in 1968. Like it is a real mind fuck of a place. And
California in general is fucked that way. Cause you forget that there is such a conservative bent to California that you like there's so many hippies around, but there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, but like economically I'm sort of more conservative.
You know, third thing, how many, 70-year-old hippies have you talked to recently? Because
they're all QAnon.
There's an interesting kind of conservatism to that, because everybody's so fucking comfortable. You know, like upper middle class, like financially secure 70-year-old self-identified hippies in California.
All the hippies grew up and voted for Reagan. There's no real such thing as a hippie from the 60s anymore anyway.
Man, we do sound like old fucking men this episode. What the fuck? I know.
Isn't it wild?
We are fucking old. And that's the point. Yeah. Like, when you get... I'm older than you guys by a lot.
Thanks, man.
And
thanks, Dad.
It is... It hurts... It hurts the most with music because that's the thing I care about the most. But I see it in everything. Like, I see it in every cultural thing. I see, like... Oh, the kids are at that stage of liking stuff, whether it's fashion or music or art or wine or food. It's like, oh, the kids are just that's their fucking thing right now. I remember when we had our thing.
I want to be clear that. every time I teach anything, and I think this is why this is why teaching is fun. Like, the kids are fucking better than I was. Like, I like you know.
Yeah, we're like, bad.
No, like being there are things that you can do and dream of and actually execute when you're like 24 that you know, like at or like 20, like you, like, it's great. It's not, you know, it's different.
It's good. It's actually a very good thing for the world.
They're mostly doing better shit.
Yeah.
This is why teaching is fun, because it kind of puts you in touch with that. So you don't curl into a mollusk and think like kind of retreat into that complacent sort of feeling of like, I've seen all these stages of humanity.
Yeah. I was rewatching Broad City from the beginning last night. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Because I was really tired and a little bit high and my tummy hurt.
Nice.
And
but all the laughter would make your tummy hurt more.
It's true. Well, it's a very smart and good show, but it also has aged like anything. Mm-hmm. Where I was like, oh, a lot of these like things I thought were really funny are like the kind of jokes that Gen Z makes fun of millennials for making, which I didn't at that time. I was just like, this is cutting edge fucking humor.
I think comedy in particular is really susceptible to that in a way that
like Arrested Development. It just feels like whiny Gen Xers. So I can't even go back. I'm like. It's like this weird Gen X snark. Like, you guys are so unhappy.
Uh-huh.
Like, more Tobias, please. Less of this.
Right.
Late aughts hangout sitcoms suffer a lot from this.
Oh.
Especially, like, How I Met Your Mother is, like, basically unwatchable for me.
Also, House.
Oh, boy.
House is the best show ever made. You watch your mouth.
You can't go back to it, man. Even the first episode, you're just like, why does he still have a medical license?
Oh, the episode where they, like, pretend to be, he pretends to be gay married as a prank?
God. There's an episode later on where he literally drives a car into his ex-lover's house and tries to murder her. And then they're like, then he went to Mexico for a while and he's allowed back in the country.
You know what's really old-coded?
What's that?
Watching television.
Yeah, no, fucking Jesus Christ.
Yeah, is it like an app? This is... I'm really glad you brought this wine because it every time, you know, you come on this podcast, we really...
We all sound like we're talking in one voice.
It reminds you remember that it's not a podcast about wine. It's a podcast about us, your favorite friends, who you can support at patreon.com/disgorgeous. Maybe you want us to afford our groceries. Maybe you want us to get another nose piercing.
Right now, the way John's like hair is in his eyes and he had his glasses off, I was like, he could be played by Pedro Pascal.
That is Ooh. Really sweet of you.
Yeah,
thank
wow.
you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm Pedro's nice. Mother. That's so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in my DILF era.
Yeah. That's true. You are. We're old. We're in our DILF eras.
Mm-hmm. We're old. Of course we're going to say DILF era.
I want to just like think a few more thoughts about this wine in general. Aside from the context of Napa and aside from the history of what that means and what it, like, because we, yeah. all of this is sort of like,
I think accepted. I like it.
I think I like it too. That was what I wanted to say. Like, what do we think about this wine outside of the context? Like, why is it good? Is it only good to me because it's old? Is it just drinking like what I think an old wine should be? Like, is it really well made? Like,
no.
I don't think it's particular. I think this, like, I didn't have any, like, truly, like, there's wines from this era of Napa Cabernet that I think are, like, you know, stunning. Like, you
it's
know,
not some, mind-blowing
some
in any way.
Done. Like, yeah. Some, yeah, no, it's just, like, there's a reliability to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
In the same way that there's a reliability to, like, Bordeaux from the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, sort of especially, like, pre-82, but definitely, like, mm-hmm. pre-89, 90, where it's just, like, and it has enough time to, like, where there's not a lot of tannic, like, you're not getting slapped with tannin.
Mm-hmm. Was this wine integrated. Intended to be 40 years old?
No.
Was it intended to be 20 years? Like, what do you think is wine's life state, when they were bottling it?
I think when they made it, like, there's like, precursor Napa Cabernet mm-hmm. stuff that goes back to the late 20s, but really it's, you know, Napa had all kinds of cultivars in it, right? There was Semillon and Green Hungarian and Colombard and Valdiguet and mm-hmm. and all this other stuff. And it's not until the sort of 70s and 80s that you get just the idea of Napa and Cabernet being joined at the hip. By just put a pin in this, but like just the idea of like a variety as the best lens to understand wine through, I think gets more disorienting the longer that you try to stare at it, which I'm yeah. sure the two of you are finding
yeah.
over the course of the season. But I truly think, you know, like when these guys were putting wines like this in a bottle, wines like this hadn't been around long enough for anybody to have a track record for right. aging it. And even, you know, even the stuff that had been around a little longer, like Beaulieu, Old BV, you know, that was like in like giant, like 1,000-liter redwood fermenter, like mm-hmm. that, you know, truly wild.
Yeah, it's old California cowboy shit.
Yeah.
It is weird because
this isn't that. This is, you know, no. I don't know what this is. This,
like, this feels ill at ease, even with my idea of what San Francisco was like in the late 80s. Like, it does feel like Napa, like California's always been, I guess, like most wine countries, really confusing to me. Like, trying to imagine like Italy as a cohesive whole is about as hard as imagining California as a cohesive whole.
I mean, I think, yeah, California isn't, right? But
yeah, and maybe for different reasons too. Like, With California, it's
because... Well, there's no Doges in California. There's like a... yeah. No Habsburgs.
There's no Dogecoin?
Oh no, God. There is now.
I think California is almost a trap, too, because you're either inside the house, and it has its own kind of mythos and lore and like wine history and stuff, but it's very inward-looking. It's sort of like only uses... It's big enough that it can use only itself as a comparison.
As a reference, right.
So it's either, you know... So you get that black hole, or it's like people coming from the outside being like, wow, I thought California was one thing, and it turns out there's like different stuff.
Yeah,
it's really hard to occupy a middle ground of actually having an interesting thought about California without like,
it's like James Bond. Like, you can have new versions of James Bond, like, oh, this is this era's James Bond, but like certain things about it have to remain the same, and if you alter those things, it's no longer James Bond. Did that make sense?
It was so close to making sense. And I feel like people are going to want to give you the benefit of the doubt.
The family that runs James Bond's last name is Broccoli. That's all I guess.
It is Broccoli.
What?
The family that owns James Bond.
It's a family-owned franchise.
It's called Broccoli. Speaking of,
yeah, it's like if Mondavi still owned Mondavi.
Yeah. The producer's name was like Robert Broccoli. Like, yeah. We're not making this up.
No.
And now his children.
This sounds like a joke. Like, how can I operate on him? He's my son.
Susie Broccoli. Yeah. She like runs.
The doctor was a woman. John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The producer was a woman. Well, I don't know. I don't like it when I get introspective drinking red wine because it does feel like this is a good time to cry.
But this is what the beauty of red wine is, John.
Don't worry, John. Like, we're going to drink white wine soon.
I know. Thank God.
That's why I think a little more red wine in your diet might be good for you. If you're not going to eat meat, like, we need you to get a little bit of red wine.
For the iron?
Red wine
has a high iron content.
I had two bottles of red wine the other night.
Wow. Did you cry?
I'm so proud of you.
I did. I watched... No Hard Feelings.
Oh, hell yeah.
Sure. And there was a little bit of like...
What part did you cry at?
All of it.
When she was naked kicking people?
Yeah, I was like, I wish that was me.
That is a great...
Yeah.
That movie, I cannot believe that more of you motherfuckers haven't seen that movie. It's so good.
I've seen it.
I do think I rewatched it recently, and I do think... I liked it a lot. I do think the ending kind of makes you realize that it was written by a man.
Yeah.
But I think the performances and so much of the middle part, like
Jennifer Lawrence is
endings are always less icon. Interesting than the, like the middle of a story.
It sounds like Princess Aurelian.
Mm.
I'm going to grab the white wine from the refrigerator.
Beautiful.
Do I pause it or do you guys want to keep talking?
Keep talking.
Okay. Have fun.
What's your favorite James Bond movie?
Oh gosh.
Mine's License to Kill.
Yeah? Nice. Sure.
Weird.
Yeah. I haven't seen License to Kill in a long time. I would be very open to the idea.
There's something about those weird 80s ones with...
Well, it's the Timothy Dalton. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like... They're like, we could do some stuff differently. And in this one, it's like, what if James Bond...
Oh, thank you.
...gave up his position and just started, like, revenge killing?
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
I mean,
it's also like dumb 80s, like,
yeah, I was about to say,
which now seems kitschy and cool.
Totally. A lot of practical effects, you know, they age better.
Yeah.
I think Casino Royale still really holds up.
The Woody Allen one?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
John, what's your favorite James Bond movie?
I was going to say, it's probably Casino Royale. I've never been a James Bondsman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of James Bond.
You and your
movies.
Dad didn't watch a lot of movies together?
No.
Because I think that's how you become a James Bond fan.
I actually did a deep dive, I think the summer after I got married the first time, but my new wife at the moment like worked somewhere else for a summer.
Why can't you temper?
You could say your wife at the moment or your new wife, but your new
why
wife
can't
at
you
the temper?
You can't locate
I don't
any of your
know
wives
how to
with
talk
the language.
About things within time and space. It's a problem. It might be ADD. I'm like, the wife that then was the wife but had been my girlfriend and now is my ex.
I think we all need to take a seminar on talking appealingly about having lived through a period of time longer than 22 years.
My point was...
I want to keep doing it, but...
I had what I call my lost summer.
This is your current wife?
This is my ex-wife.
Okay.
And she was... We got married and then she like left for 3 months.
Okay, that's regular.
It was really good. And I was like, I guess I'll work in this wine bar. And come home and like drink vodka on the rocks and watch James Bond by myself.
That sounds so tight.
It was really fun. I also was doing a lot of mushrooms.
When I was in high school, my friend Brian hit me with a car.
Oh, God. Okay.
Backing up or going forward?
Going forward. He said he was trying to drive like James Bond. So at this time, the way...
that's your favorite James Bond.
Yeah, idiom that we were all driving with was moving the wheel as little as possible, like trying to narrowly avoid things. And Brian just hit me with his car. And I got
up.
Over? I fell down. It's like, whomp.
Oh. Did he drive over you?
No, it clipped.
He stopped right away.
It clipped me. Okay. And then like he got out and I was like, he's like, you okay? I'm like, yeah. That's not how James Bond would have done it. But like, no hard feelings. Like I knew what he was working on.
Yeah,
just like
fair.
The movie.
Yeah.
Does he ever hit people?
No hard feelings. No, you said no hard feelings.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, like the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And then John took his clothes off.
He took my clothes off, started kicking everyone in the nuts.
Yeah. Mm. This is... good. What is this?
White wine.
It's so good. White wine is way better than red wine. I'm sorry. You're right, John.
It is funny. Thank God. Doing Sauvignon Blanc, the way we've been doing is drinking something that we really like and then going into Cabernet Sauvignon. Yeah. Like, this also exists. Starting off, doing all the smart talk with something that is fine and moving to like, a tall drink of cold white wine.
As John has been described.
This is when you stop crying, you start getting mean.
Yeah.
This is what white wine is good for. This is why you like it.
Yeah, this is like...
It's like, you know who I never liked? Those conversations only start with white wine.
Can I be real with you for a second, bestie? Like,
it's like when you're at a party, at a cocktail party, you only drink gin and you don't eat any of the hors d'oeuvres because you want to stay fresh and clear.
Yes.
You want your... Yes. You don't want to get muzzy.
You don't want to get muddled by that brown liquor.
I'm so... not on my alcoholism tip right now. So I'm like starting to be nostalgic about like being a booze hound and just like
God.
When you go somewhere, like I'm not going to eat because I'm getting fucking tore up. It's such a fun feeling. I would never do that anymore.
Yeah. A sunny day like this, it's a great time to be in a quiet bar, low light, just watching the sun in through the front door. You kind of imagine that you're outside, but you're also in a glass. Yeah.
7 or 8 Guinnesses and you just lean to the bartender. You know what really pisses me off? You just let him go.
Bartender's like, I legally have to listen to you tell me this. James is putting orders in because he's a sales rep now.
I'm sorry.
I accidentally...
only part-time.
Some of the wine went right over my glass and directly into my spit cup. Which
that's where it's going to end up.
I mean, that's what we call a what's up moment, bruh.
What's up, bro? James, please tell us what this Sauvignon Blanc is.
Yeah.
It's good.
Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite things. This is from a guy named Sylvain Dittier. Mm-hmm. We're in the Loire, but we're in Chenin and Cabernet Franc country. We're in Semur. We're in the sort of butter yellow, limestone villages thing. Sylvain worked for Antoine at Collier and a bunch of other fancy places. I think he interned at like Gobi in the Roussillon. Anyway, point being, this is like this like hillside that he started working with maybe 8 years ago, where I always forget which is which, but like it's either the top is planted and to Chenin and the bottom is planted to Sauvignon Blanc or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
The Chenin's real old, like almost 100 years, and the Sauvignon Blanc was planted in like the late 40s. And again, it's kind of like, this is really far west, I guess, to put it, you know, we're before the river kind of kinks like a garden hose south of Orléans. Mm-hmm. So we're still in a place where like you get enough ripeness to get things like enough warmth is being funneled by the Gulf Stream, which hopefully still keeps, you know, has at least up to this point continued to like bring warm water from the Caribbean up to Scotland, which is why Scotland looks like Scotland and not like Newfoundland. And yeah, so it's Sauvignon Blanc from Chenin country. So you get kind of this longer, later kind of feeling of ripeness that for me kind of brings it into, I don't know, aromatics belong to you. You can figure, but like it's this more like it's like more like sage and like, you know, when you put like the burnt honey on the grapefruit rather than like the kind of like super bitter cut grass kind of situation.
What vintage is this? This is the 22? This is the fresh
one? I don't know. Maybe 21.
I had a bottle of this in Montreal last time I was there. And it was fucking killer.
It's called Sauvignon, which is a like joke. in quotes.
So I'm like S-A-U-M.
Like, yeah, like jump the mignon or like, mm-hmm. but this is Sauvignon. So it's VDF. It's Vin de France, obviously, because yeah. there's no such thing as Sauvignon Blanc that's Sauvignon. I don't know how much Sauvignon Blanc there is anywhere near here. My feeling is not any.
Why would they have even planted it?
That's a quite, like, I don't know, fucking yeah. idea. I mean, it's World War II, man. Like, you know.
Right.
Well, I mean, post-war, yeah.
Bad ideas.
And also before the end of World War II, they were doing bad ideas as well. Can I just say that in Europe, they made some bad decisions.
I mean, if you want to get canceled.
So brave.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're supposed to be sliding rightward.
Yeah. I'm. Hey, those are the greatest generation.
Okay, that's okay. Now we're on.
Do you know who betrayed?
Kids these days with their they-them, yeah. they wouldn't know about a greatest generation.
Wow.
That's what John
Hey, France, if it wasn't for America, you'd all be speaking fucking French.
That was good. That got me.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Woo!
And we're back.
No, but real talk, the Vichys. Fuck a Vichy, am I right?
I like Vichy Catalan as a water.
It's a good water, but mm-hmm. yeah, Vichy France is. It's incredible Vichy how that went just right down the memory hole so fast. They're like, no, oh, we were all the. You ask any French person, like, oh yeah, we were in the resistance. Yeah. No, you fucking weren't.
Get him.
Preach.
Get
him,
dog.
Wow.
I can't tell if I'm.
Boy Cook.
Yeah. Like, let's go Europe.
This is the downside of getting older.
Going to the Klimt Museum was so crazy. After we just fucking did the whole Austro-Hungarian thing, and I was just looking around. Like,
I do love that museum. That's the new gallery for listeners.
And everything is like, it ends, Klimt dies in 1918 from a fucking stroke. And just like, it's just this last flowering of this like weird, like, and this is exactly the Austro-Hungarian conversation we had. This like, this moment of like, all the contradictions of the systems they were all holding, and then just one day they stopped. And anyways, I'm thinking about that for no reason.
Yeah,
they
got now could be.
I'm still pretty depressed about the fucking genocide.
Yeah, as one. Which is.
One? That was, good question. Good call.
Anywho.
I thought you said we weren't supposed to be reflective and melancholy on white wine.
You blew it.
No, this is me being mad.
Galen was wrong.
Yeah.
But I for me, the secret to this wine is it tastes so fucking French.
It does.
In both the derogatory and good way. Like, it's got a little bit of that nasty, like, there's like the eau de on cigarette de the outre room.
Yeah.
That is really exciting about it. It's like, it's
reduction for.
Yeah.
Sure. If you want to make it dumb and scientific.
And there's,
maybe it's sex.
Yeah, maybe it's le sexo. Did I tell you this? That the way you say sexting in French is sexto?
No.
My phone is in French.
And you've been texting the word sexting a lot?
So sometimes when you try and make an erotic search on your phone in French, sometimes the erotic websites are in French now.
Okay.
So I've learned a lot of interesting interesting terminology.
Sexto. The French, they smoke spliffs. Everything about them is just a little wrong. Spliffs so much.
Oh, there's having a bit of a sexto chat.
The Wi-Fi? On the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I have to access a Wi-Fi so I could WhatsApp a sexto message.
It's funny that we were so nice to the Californians, and now we're being so mean to the French.
That's fine with me.
That's fine. No, this is like as French as the last wine was American to me. It's really interesting.
It tastes like slimy water, which I really appreciate.
Like that. I really like when Sauvignon Blanc, the aromatics of it have been so twisted for so long or so like forced into play. Like, we need to push the aromatics of Sauvignon Blanc into, like you said, like cut grass.
Yeah.
Or into like whatever. That when you let... When you let it cook, like when you let it kind of be like a little different for a second, you're like, fuck, there's so much potential in Sauvignon Blanc to be an interesting aromatic grape. The way that like Pinot Gris can be or like, or whatever can, not Pinot Gris, but like.
Oh, I think Pinot Gris is so much better than
Well, fair.
I love Pinot Gris, my little chameleon, my changeling.
But there's, I think the potential was within Sauvignon Blanc. It's just never been let out. The monster's never been let loose.
I mean, I would go further and just like to me, I.
Or it's been let out hot, like, too much in specific places.
Sauvignon Blanc might be the best regional grape, and that it is like this ideal, perfect little French floofy. It's like the French Friulano. If it just got to be that, it would be goated with the sauce.
French Friulano.
Wow. But like because it just got good enough and it, like, things just lined up in the right way and like. The way that the Loire Valley's its closeosity to Paris is like before refrigerated. All this just means that like
it was the canal from the river that would like take you straight to
from the river like to the sea. Sancerre is going to be free, and it just those things conspired to make a bullshit little regional French grape this massive thing that I don't. There's just it's done no work to support it, but it's great like this.
I know, yeah.
When I teach classes, I have to figure out ways to come at this circuitously, and because there's no upside to saying it straight out. I'm going to say it straight out on the like. I think grape varieties are like grape varieties in general are a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a bad way to to think about like what a wine could be or what it can do. We're constantly talking about like, oh, like this grape variety is usually considered terrible, but here's an example great. Or like this grape variety, you know, like, and like, it's like so much comes down to farming and attention.
Yeah.
And as soon as that lens snapped into place of thinking about cultivars as though that they were the end all be all. And that meant that you could just carpet a series of hillsides with clones of the same cultivar from the same plant and like think you were doing a good job, that was what wine was. Like everything got a little more fucked than it had been before.
Yeah.
You know,
Burgundy fucked everything up.
Yeah, but even Burgundy, like, you know, up until World War II, like, Aligoté was still in some of the best plots and that, you know, like, it's, I think, you know, it's really post-war that does it to us. And it's really unfortunate because, like, I don't know there's anything inherently, I don't know, maybe there is. I'll table that for a second. But, like, I think if it was an accident the grape varieties became brand names, and that's what got commercialized, it's a really unhappy accident, because once that becomes true, then capitalist logic is going to go into deep monoculture. You know, and maybe it was always the case that monoculture was going to be easier to sort of like copy paste, like you're doing like housing zones in SimCity, than you know, planting different plants. But
you know what's interesting, and I never thought about this until now, but when the French demanded that America stop labeling its wine as Chablis and Champagne.
Yeah.
They had no choice but then to put the only other name that meant anything, which is the name of the 85%+ grape that was in that bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what created this in a way. In a sense, like their protection, which was, you know, understandably, of being like, no, Chablis is a fucking place where
it's
we make
village.
Wine.
Yeah, it's not a. Yeah.
It's not type like, what are you doing? Americans were like, well, I still have to sell this fucking wine.
It still needs a name.
It needs a name, yeah. So I'm going to call it Sauvignon Blanc or whatever.
Which wasn't even a
fanciful name.
I mean, your Chablis would have been like Colombard, Green Hungarian, Riesling, Riesling, Gray Riesling.
But there was no other option. It was like the only thing we can do now is no one knows where the fuck we are, or what our villages are called. So now we have no choice but to rely on, like, have you heard of this?
You grape? Don't want a good.
They grow it in the place that you like.
So Rutherford Premier Cru Classé.
Yeah, right.
Oof.
Yeah. So like it doesn't work. So. And in that way, that's like what pushed this idea of variety being so important, is because there was no other way to sell this fucking wine. And selling the fucking wine is what Americans wanted to do.
Yeah. But I mean, but then it's such a trap, right? Because once Chardonnay isn't just a grape variety, it's a way that wine tastes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Or like even Sauvignon Blanc. I mean, I talk a lot about this in class, but like the way that, you know, if you bartend long enough, like obviously grape varieties are shorthand for people, your guests are using them as shorthand for styles.
Yeah.
And if you are in like the dumbest possible world, which I'm just going to say for the sake of argument is like
New York.
An art gallery opening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, where you, like you're buying from Southern and you have like if it's white wine, you have like four white wines by the glass, which is a lot for a gallery opening, but bear with me. And your four white wines by the glass are Chardonnay, Riesling, Pinot Grigio, and Sauvignon Blanc. And the Chardonnay, well, it's too buttery. And it's big and it's just like gloopy. And it's and then the Riesling is sweet. Mm-hmm. And then the Pinot Grigio tastes like nothing.
Yeah.
And then the Sauvignon Blanc is like the thing that's like crisp and like is crisp and dry and refreshing. And that's how you like how we got to the place where Sauvignon Blanc occupies that ecological niche. Is like weird and complicated, but we certainly did.
The colors of the palette.
Right.
That's strange. And is we don't realize, even with colors, our cultural like creations.
Yeah.
They're not like truths. Like if you look at the names of colors in other languages from other cultures, they don't always align with our names of colors.
Mm-hmm. Homer's wine, dark sea.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Like blue and green in Japan.
Blue and green in Japan, right. Yeah. So exactly. So it's like,
well, the color is a spectrum, and then we like decide where the line is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that affects your ability to notice things.
And so then it's like we have butter, sweet, crisp, nothing. Those are the four flavors.
Okay, I'm in.
Which do you fucking want? Yeah. Choose your fighter.
I'll take crisp.
I'll take butter any day of the fucking week.
And then every day of my life, I'm like, oh, you want a Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. Would you like it to say Sauvignon Blanc on the tin? Or do you just want to feel that feeling?
Right, yeah.
90% of the time, people are like, I want to feel that feeling. Great. Like, let me figure out a way to... And sometimes, part of that answer is, this Sauvignon Blanc isn't going to make you feel like Sauvignon Blanc makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Sad and alone.
Yeah.
So, something I've been thinking about, and I haven't said this in the podcast yet because it's so dorky, but this is a safe space, I think, for that. I've been thinking about Dungeons & Dragons a lot recently with
the
wine.
The recent movie or the game?
The game. Okay. And the idea is that...
I prefer more of like a Blades in the Dark.
You're not going to let me... You guys are not...
We told you this before we started.
Yeah, let me get through my educational moment. So I've been thinking about like a controlled probability. And like so much of Dungeon, like the idea of
rolling the 20 side die.
You roll 20 side die and you add bonuses and it describes the probability of something, which is just like, you know, like if you're in a certain space of a certain terroir, it's a lot easier to grow some things than other things.
Sure.
And so like, but that doesn't mean it's impossible to do other stuff. In fact, almost everything is quite possible if you're willing to do a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I've been thinking of that as kind of like a mental map for like all the Canadian wine we've had recently has really kind of wigged me out in terms of what they're growing there. And it's, you can grow Pinot Noir there. It's just, you have to really make that your focus. Mm-hmm. And I think Sauvignon Blanc is this grape that just like, hey, statistically, I can kind of grow wherever. It's not going to be great, but you don't have to worry about me.
I was about to say, statistically, it invites you not to focus, right?
Yeah.
That's what,
yeah. Yeah, just like fucking chill. Like, go work on something else, baby. I'm gonna get like cat pee here.
That's why it ended up in Sancerre, right? It was easier to grow than Pinot Noir.
And so in fifth edition, it's a swords bard, if anyone needs to know. It does everything better than everyone else does.
I don't know what that means.
I know what that means. I do. And if you like it, it's patreon.com/thisgorgeous. We'll play Dungeons and Dragons. Remember when every podcast did that for a while?
I didn't listen to
I used to hate that. I was like, oh, we're going to have fun today. Like, no, insult people. Get mean.
Leave it to the actual play podcasters.
Have we said what we want to say about Sauvignon Blanc through the prism of this wine? James, what else did you want to say about
it? It's funny. My only goal with this wine was to bring something delicious.
Yeah.
I was like,
it's so delicious.
Like, I had my like thesis statement with the Cabernet. And then I was like, and then let's drink something that's probably going to be good. I guess I have one thing that isn't really about Sauvignon Blanc, but something to think about. Like the way that this wine is, one problem that often crops up is like, because there's a thing about this wine, apart from it, we like it.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're like wine people and we think the thing is delicious. Like this is natural white wine in the sense that it goes through mallow, you know, so it's a little looser. It's a little more textural. Like it has, there's like wine in that wine.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I think it's really easy once you're dealing with minimal intervention to turn people who are like, I'm a big red guy. I'm like, great. Like I can give you the natural wine, big red equivalent. And it's good. I can basically do a one-for-one substitution, and you're not going to notice the difference. you're going to be, I mean, you know, maybe you'll be like, this is even more delicious. Or maybe you're going to be like, wow, like I've never smelled Brett before, whatever. But like, it's going to be the same thing, just with like maybe a little bit more sort of spectrum of being alive. But with natural white wine, you know, unless you're in a really specific place where your pHs are super fucking low and your acids are really high and mallow isn't happening because of X, Y, and Z and you're really cold climate, like in general, all of your white wines, if you're not going to sterile filter them and you're not going to sulfur to block mallow and everything else, are going to be
satisfied that
well, they're just going to be a little looser and a little bigger and a little broader and a little, they're going to have a little bit, like it's really, really difficult to do the art gallery, hey, like I'm going to give you crisp Pinot Grigio, or, you know, even I'm going to give you like Sauvignon Blanc in a natural wine setting.
Yeah.
Not impossible, but a lot trickier than if somebody comes in and they're like, I want a Cabernet. I'm like, do you want it to say Cabernet on the tin? They're like, no. I'm like, great. I've got easy peasy. And you know, and underneath the hood, like somebody's farming with like regenerative cover crops and like spraying milkway to like, you know, keep away the powdery mildew. And, you know, they're like, and it's wild yeast fermentation and it's in a fucking amphora and it's unfiltered and they didn't even,
it still tastes red. Whatever. Yeah.
And it tastes like that thing that they said.
Yeah.
But even like this Sauvignon Blanc would make a Sancerre drinker mad.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. And, but those
like,
people,
to the same degree to which it is delicious.
Kiki, this is too bobo.
This is a little more bobo. Yeah. Yeah. It has a, I mean, it's,
the thing James and I have been talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys are just writing me out of history every single day. When they fucking finally write.
That's what aging is.
When they write like the New York City natural wine book, they're like, oh yeah, Kevin and James had this cool podcast. I'm going to be the Jules Chavez of this bullshit.
Oh.
I mean, it's true that only in the sense that future historians won't, like, the documentation will be so fragmentary that they'll think that we were the same person.
That's actually
bad
news
for both of us.
Yeah, like, well, especially for you. I'm doing some shit. I'm cooking.
This frog fucking foot guy.
Well, anything to plug?
I guess this is coming out tomorrow. So next week, I have in-person classes, which
okay,
I'm
cool.
doing pretty regularly for Children's Atlas.
So COVID's over.
Listen, on Tuesday, I'm at Tin Parlor doing the fourth volume in a series called Fringe Spain. Tin Parlor's a conservice like tin fish wine situation in the back of Nudie Branch in the East Village. And we're doing Pais.
Oh,
we're
exciting.
About the Conquista, and we're drinking Pais and Moscatel and talking about how nativity and indigeneity, like what it has to do with grape varieties and whether tomatoes are Italian.
Ooh.
And on Wednesday, I'm at Italy.
Oh.
Yeah, Vino, Italy Vino in Flatiron. And I'm doing Piedmont Beyond Nebbiolo.
Whoa, exciting.
Wow. Yeah, some Pellaverga and Rucche. And see, I'm talking about grape variety. Here's the other secret about grape varieties. People love to show up for classes about grape varieties and then leave being like, oh my God, grape varieties aren't a useful lens to understand wine through. They are not a useful lens to understand wine through, but they're a very fun lens to dismantle ways of understanding.
I guess what I want to do this season, but I don't know if we're doing it.
We're doing a great job. Any plugs for you, Kevin?
If you want to destroy my sweater,
you
can pull this thread while I walk away.
That's nice.
I'll just say, you know what? It's almost summer. Just do drugs. Fuck this shit.
Yeah.
You don't have to think this much about drugs.
Nice. No, we don't worry about it. Where'd it come from? Out of some fucking lab. Put it on your tongue. Gobble it up, bitch.
Well, thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. You're welcome for having us.
Bye.
Bye.